Honored and delighted to be your host for this hour of fun and adventure. Thank you for the opportunity to contribute to your lives. Every day I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun, inspiring the largest number of people to experience vibrantly, exquisitely healthy, wealthy living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so that we can enjoy a global loving community. My commitment week in and week out is to find and bring to you guests that are going to make your lives better, healthier. Just get ready. Today is one of my favorite individuals that I've had personal positive experience with, and someone that when you get a chance, something as important as our teeth and our health. Dr. Hal Huggins will be with us in a moment, and get ready to write down his contact information, visit his website. When you hear some of what he's got to share and the credibility behind this individual, you're going to be thrilled, thrilled, and more thrilled, because it's going to make a difference in the health of millions of people's lives. Now, Dr. Huggins graduated from dental school in Nebraska in 1962, and during the past 43 years, he's lectured, oh gosh, just 1,500 days to professional groups, given thousands of radio and TV interviews, was actually featured on 60 Minutes Australia, 60 Minutes here in the U.S., will be on in 60 Minutes New Zealand within a day. This gentleman has made some amazing, amazing breakthroughs in what is behind mercury and amalgam fillings and the effect that they've had on our health. He's written a number of books. The most poignant one is It's All in Your Head, a book that will give you just life-saving information about the link between mercury, amalgams, and illness. There is so much that this gentleman has done and researched and brought forward. I am just honored and delighted to introduce you to Dr. Hal Huggins. Dr. Huggins, welcome.
Well, thank you, Ken. It is good to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. I am so honored and want to start off, of course. Sometimes people will not only listen in here on bbsradio.com, they want to visit a guest website, and so they could do that by going to Huggins, H-U-G-G-I-N-S, Applied Healing, A-P-P-L-I-E-D, healing.com.
Well, we've got one that's a whole lot easier than that.
Oh, no.
That one I can never remember. But an easy way to get there is drhuggins.com.
drhuggins.com.
D-R-H-U-G-G-I-N-S. And we're having a whole new system put together on that one, which will be together probably Monday because of the upcoming New Zealand program, 60 Minutes program, so that they can get into it. We had it done, and it didn't really turn out too well. They cut it from 250 pages down to 20, and it just didn't say much. So we're restoring a lot of that, and by Monday, drhuggins.com will be up and operational.
Oh, good. And then they would also see, as we go on, and learn more about not just what you've discovered about mercury, but the breadth of what you offer in your clinic as a support. Because, I mean, there's a book you've written, Who Makes Your Hormones Hum? Oh, I've got to hear more about that. Another book, Solving the MS Mystery. Another one, Why Raise Ugly Kids? And, of course, Who Wants to Do That? And then this classic book of yours, It's All in Your Head. So many people, I mean, the history of mercury and amalgam fillings apparently goes back about 150 years. Now, can you give us a little bit of the background? Does dentistry still use the fillings that were the same?
Yeah. They put in about a quarter of a million of them yesterday in the United States. Now, when we first started talking about the mercury situation back in 1973, they were placing about a million a day. And now they're down to about a quarter of a million a day. So we have had some impact on it. But there's still quarter million fillings a day being put in, and the mercury comes out of every one of them. And, you know, what is a safe level? The Center for Disease Control has one. The ADA, American Dental Association, has one. Kind of like, you know, take a bath and it is okay. OSHA has one. Everybody has a different level. So I took a course in, I've had 13 years of college now, can't seem to get away from it. I just took a course in forensic toxicology, and I asked the toxicologist, what is the safe level of mercury? And he kind of leaned back and looked down, and he says, well, doctor, I knew I was in trouble. And he said, one atom can kill one cell. You tell me the safe level. Well, there is no safe level. But there's plenty of it that comes out of the fillings, about 34 micrograms a day. If the filling was in sterile water and not being chewed upon, you know, this is in the laboratory. So if you have it in your mouth and you're drinking hot beverages and you're chewing food and stuff like that, there's a whole lot more than 34 micrograms per day per filling. Well, how much does it take to do neurological damage? 1 microgram will create measurable neurological damage. The average person has 8 of the silver mercury fillings in their mouth. They're called silver because of their color, not because of the content, because the 50% of it is mercury, and that's what gives it the silver color when it's put in. It, of course, tarnishes and turns black. And then you have 16 different corrosion products attacking your poor body. And where does it attack the body? Name it. It can go anywhere. There are 3 forms of mercury. It comes out of the filling as a vapor. It can be converted by the bacteria in the mouth and the intestinal tract into methylmercury. And methylmercury has no barriers. It goes through the placental barrier to cause birth defects. It goes through the brain to cause, Alzheimer's, and multiple sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, seizures, Parkinson's. I mean, the nervous diseases are phenomenal. And, you know, I took another degree. I took a postdoc master's in immunology because we found that all the autoimmune diseases, the immunologic challenges come from mercury. And, you know, there's just no good reason to use it. Well, there's one good reason to use it. It's cheap. And that's why it was used back in 1840. It started in 1832. First commercial use was in Paris in 1832. And isn't it interesting that the first cases of multiple sclerosis occurred in 1832 in Paris?
Wow.
Yeah.
What a coincidence.
There are other things that follow. Leukemia follows the pattern. There are a lot of diseases that we didn't have before then that have just gone up, and especially in when we started using the high copper amalgam in 76, the mercury in those fillings, everything since 76 comes out 50 times faster than the fillings before that. So if you had a filling placed from 1977 on, it was the equivalent of having 50 fillings placed the year before.
Wow.
That's a lot of mercury. That's a lot of damage. And these diseases, diabetes and arthritis and all the rest of the autoimmune diseases, are skyrocketing. They're going up like at a rate of 10% a year, which, you know, after 10, 20 years, you're looking at hundreds of percent increase in these diseases. So that means taking many more drugs. And the more drugs you take, the more frustrated you get because the drugs don't kill mercury. And the pharmaceutical industry, of course, and the medical profession does not realize that the objective is to kill mercury. Well, if I gave you a hammer, could you kill water? You can't kill water, you can't kill mercury, but it can kill you.
Yeah.
And that's so where we run into the problem. That's what our business is all about, is you can't just go in and yank out the fillings. We have a referral service here. We have trained people into an alliance where they do things properly, because you mess up one little place in taking out fillings and replacing them, and what we found is that people would call, and, you know, the closest person we would have might be 500 miles away. And they're not going to do that. So you go to the guy across the street and say, hey, take these things out and put in a white filling. We call those people back 6 months later to see where they went. And of those people who just went across the street and had them replaced, 63% end up with a new disease they did not have before having their fillings removed. So
wow.
This is a serious situation. You don't just go out and say, hey, mercury's poisonous, and get it out.
So it's one, it's important to realize that it is poisonous, and two, it's important to take action. But three, and probably most importantly in that, is there's a specific process, and you've been working on this for, what, many,
oh,
many 100, years?
200 years, something like.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, 38 years.
Seems like 200 sometimes.
Yeah, it sometimes does. But I just found out about the mercury problem 38 years ago. I've been in practice 45 years now. But 38 years ago, we found out what mercury did. And I went to the Dental Association and told them, and boy, they started on a campaign to destroy me. I mean, the things you read about me on the web, they even fascinate me. They're so terrible. But the reason for that is the liability, because the liability to the Dental Association and to the dentist is thousands of times bigger than the tobacco industry. And when that hits, God only knows what's going to happen, and he won't tell.
Yeah, so there's a lot of financial pressure to keep this undercover.
Well, sure, yeah, because, you know, if everybody who came down with multiple sclerosis was awarded $1 million, that would be $114.6 quintillion dollars, which is more money than there is in the universe. So it could be kind of a
tricky
thing. But I had an attorney visiting just yesterday. As a matter of fact, and he said that, you know, as far as product liability is concerned, who manufactures amalgam? The dentist. Because the amalgam is the generic term that's used for the silver mercury filling. But, the, you know, one company manufactures mercury, another one manufactures the powder, and the dentist is the one who mixes it together to make amalgam, which is what they stick in your tooth. Well, nobody ever thought about it, but, you know, all dentists are covered by malpractice insurance. Yeah, you can't have a license without it, okay. But this is not covered by malpractice. This is product liability, that you are, a dentist is manufacturing a product. And the liability there is not covered by insurance, and dentists are not aware of that. I've been in this battle for 38 years, and I didn't know until yesterday that was the situation. But the liability goes to the Dental Association because they control the state boards and they control the dentists and tell them what they can do and what they can't do. they claim, oh, all we do is put out a magazine. Oh, no, the dental schools can't even function if they don't have ADA approval. They don't get financing from the state if they don't have ADA approval. The state board can't operate without dental association approval. So the ADA up in Chicago, they're the ones with the big bucks, and they're the ones who are also the ones who with the maximum liability. But they're going to bail out, and then the individual, they're going to say, well, you know, we don't do it. It's that nasty old dentist who mixes this stuff together, and he's the one you need to go after. So all the dentists are going to find they're not protected by insurance.
Wow.
What do you think's going to happen there, Ken?
It's not a pretty picture. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't know. Do all the dentists go out of business because they are now sued for like huge amounts of money?
I think you're right. The dentist will be sued out of business, and the only people who fill your teeth are going to be the lawyers.
But
now, won't that be fun?
Well, I don't. Yes, that could be scary.
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. So you've got definitely some important work to do to be able to address this. And I know, separate from the legal ramifications, so many people are interested in their health. And I'd like to, would you help us to learn a little bit more of how someone that really is concerned about this can follow a procedure that you've used for, what, 25, 30 years now?
38. No, that's not really true, because we started 38 years ago, and we made a bunch of mistakes then. Like with multiple sclerosis, if we got a 10% success rate, we thought that was wonderful. And now we're up over 85%. Well, that's because we made some errors back in the 60s and 70s that we don't make anymore now. We found out what works and what doesn't work, and with a little bit of refinement, even Lou Gehrig's disease, back 12 years ago, we had 0% effectiveness there, and now we're up to about 30%, and that's, you know, from diagnosis to death, about 2 years. But we're seeing those babies turn around now. So, and this is what angers the Dental Association, because people, if you've ever been around somebody who's died of Lou Gehrig's disease, it is a miserable way to go. You know, they would beg to have aid be an easier way out.
Wow. I wasn't
and
familiar.
And your friendly next-door neighbor dentist is the one who did it with you. Well, he didn't know what he was doing. He didn't know that. He didn't do it on purpose. But the Dental Association certainly is doing it on purpose, because they're quite aware of all these things. But the, you know, there are symptoms, there are diseases. Let me get a piece of paper here. Some of the symptoms that we see, you know, where do they come from? Well, chronic fatigue. There are millions of people who have chronic fatigue.
And that's similar to Epstein-Barr?
Yeah, you can blame it on that, but where it comes from, that we see it from the dental aspect, is hemoglobin. You've heard of hemoglobin, right?
Sure.
Yeah. What does it carry?
Blood.
It carries oxygen. Well, the hemoglobin can also carry mercury, but oxygen jumps on hemoglobin and jumps off with practically no effort whatsoever. But if mercury gets on, it stays soldered there, and it never leaves the binding site where oxygen is supposed to be. So for the full lifespan of that red blood cell, you can't carry oxygen there. Well, you got four binding sites, and usually mercury comes in pairs, and bingo, all of a sudden each cell is carrying 50% the oxygen it should. So if you look at a blood test, oh, yeah, you got plenty of hemoglobin. Only what you don't see is that only half of it's carrying oxygen. There is another test called oxyhemoglobin that measures the oxygen saturation. And that one tells you how much oxygen you're carrying, not just how many taxi cabs, but how many people in each taxi cab. And if we take out the fillings in the right manner, which means sequential removal. Now, what in the world is that? fillings are like little tiny batteries. They have electrical charges, positive and negative. And if you take the negative current fillings out first, patients improve. If you take the positive current fillings out first, they get worse. So you have to have an instrument to measure electrical current. But if you take out the negative charge fillings first, then the body begins to dump the red blood cells that are saturated with mercury. And you see the hemoglobin level take a tremendous drop. And you think, gee, these people probably can't get out of bed. And they come in saying, oh, I just jogged 1,000 miles. You did what? They're feeling real good, and this is a real problem because they try to overdo. They may have less hemoglobin, but each one of them is now carrying more oxygen. And that will change within, a matter of 3 or 4 days. So this is part of chronic fatigue. And also, mercury attacks the thyroid gland. There was a fellow named Stortebecker in Sweden, Stockholm, Sweden, who put radioactive mercury in amalgam and put it in dog's teeth and then chased the radioactivity around the body and found it in the thyroid gland within less than 4 minutes. So if you have a thyroid, if you've had a filling for more than 4 minutes, you get a thyroid problem. Major or minor, you have a thyroid problem. So if you drop thyroid activity and drop the hemoglobin's ability to transport oxygen, do you think that might be seen as chronic fatigue?
Yeah,
certainly is. And so there are some tricky events that the patient goes through in order to get rid of the contaminated red cells and bring in new ones that are not contaminated. And, you know, every disease in the body is due to a lack of oxygen somewhere. So if you provide more oxygen, a whole lot of things are going to get better.
Wow. And now the hemoglobin, you said it could, when the negatively charged fillings or amalgams are removed, that the hemoglobin can, temporarily drop? But the increased capacity.
Yes, it drops while the body is undergoing a massive exodus of contaminated red cells.
Okay, so
how
it's
the
a cleanse.
Body knows to do that, I don't have the foggiest idea. But we know what it takes to make it happen, and we know what it takes to make it not happen. And as long as we're getting rid of them, I mean, if you do a urine mercury test, you'll see the mercury in the urine go up 200, 300, 400, 500, 600%. So it's easy to see where the mercury is going. So you can trace out what is happening to the bone marrow here. And speaking of bone marrow, the white blood cells, that's part of your immune system, they change within hours. We've had leukemia patients who have dropped white cells as much as 60,000 points in 24 hours by doing the procedures properly. Well, you know, leukemia doesn't always respond that well, but leukemia is a dangerous disease that we didn't have very much of before we had amalgam. So, you know, what's the justification for giving people leukemia, multiple sclerosis, chronic fatigue, and depression's another big one. We see that in 73% of the people. And then mercury gets into the brain, and you become depressed. And many people, now they're not going to tell you this, they're not going to fill it out on a questionnaire, but when I talk to them person to person and there's nobody else around, I can look at the chemistry and say, you know, there are some things here that indicate you have suicidal thoughts of 10, 20 times a day running through your brain, and you don't know where they're coming from. And sometimes people just instantly break down and cry because they thought they were a bad person. They thought, you know, they can't tell their religious representatives about it. They certainly can't tell their family. And so they just suffer with it because they don't understand where it's coming from. And a lot of times the suicidal things are gone within less than 48 hours. And, you know, suicide is the number one cause of death in teenagers now. You put braces and amalgam in their mouth, and they've got all these suicidal thoughts. And as a teenager, they have no idea what to do with it. And the one thing we found is that families have, within less than a minute of committing suicide, they did not realize the significance of what they were doing. It was just, I should tie my shoes and I should blow my brains out since they're of equal significance. Which should I do first? Mm. And this has made so many parents feel better because, you know, when your child commits suicide, the first thing you do is blame yourself.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
It's not yourself. It's the dental association who is demanding that dentists place amalgam, that if you say anything against amalgam, they're going to take your license away. That's in the code of ethics now.
Oh, all dentists have to swear to this to be able to practice.
Yeah, if you say anything against mercury, sanctions will be applied. And sanctions, that's a real broad term, but there are hundreds of dentists who have lost their license for refusing to place mercury and for talking about mercury and how toxic it is.
Mm. Wow. Well, we see how long it took for the tobacco thing to become public, even though there was evidence for a long time.
Well, the evidence here just started recently. I think it was 1840.
Oh.
It was 1840 that the Dental Association split over should we use mercury because it's cheap or should we not use it because it's toxic. And it destroyed the Dental Association at that time. And in 1899, it was established again under the premise that mercury is pure and holy.
Hmm.
And they say in one of the quotations, I think it's out of, it's all in your head, one of the quotations from the Dental Association is, yes, mercury is a toxic material, but in the mouth, its toxic properties are rendered harmless.
Oh.
My professor at the University of Colorado, I showed this to him, and he says, oh, they must have discovered alchemy.
Hmm.
Because, hey, if mercury is dangerous in fish, and you get a whole lot more of it out of your fillings than you do out of the fish, it is just as dangerous in the mouth and in the brain as it is in the fish.
Now, when someone would avail themselves to contacting you, going to, as you said, on the web, drhuggins, H-U-G-G-I-N-S.com, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then do you want to also share your toll-free contact number in case people want to jot that down?
Well, thank you, Ken. The toll-free number is 866-948-4638. That's 866-948-4638.
Okay.
And operators are not standing by to take your calls right now.
Okay, so call, what is it, Monday through Friday during business hours in Mountain Time?
Yeah, 9 to 5 Mountain Time, they're here.
Okay, good, that's good to know. Now, some of the things that are curiosity to me, let's say someone follows these procedures and they get the amalgams removed. Are you able to track to the extent that all the mercury gets out of the body?
That will never happen. That's like, will the oceans run dry? No, your body is contaminated with many, many grams of mercury, and you're taking it out a few billionths of a gram a day. But you don't have to get all the mercury out of the body, fortunately. What you have to do is get the mercury going out of the body faster than it's coming in. Because we're exposed in light bulbs, you know, these new little light bulbs are supposed to be using now because they're cheaper, they're full of mercury. Fluorescent lights, fish, there are 4,000 commercial uses for mercury, and I think they've cut that down to about 2,000 now. But, you know, you get real big exposures to mercury from toilet paper, of all things, from Band-Aids. I mean, it's just all over the place that you never think about it. But you're getting exposed in the air, the food, and the water every day. But if you can excrete a couple of micrograms a day more than is coming in, the blood chemistry looks better and you feel okay. See, taking the fillings out doesn't do a whole lot except get the fillings out. It turns off the faucet. But the my part of the work is involved with putting things back together, looking at the blood chemistry and interpreting where the damage was done and what does it take to correct it, and then you do a follow-up chemistry a few days later to see if things are headed the right direction. So we've got a methodology to show whether it's working or not. And the blood chemistry also shows us what's called the ancestral diet. How much carbohydrate, protein, and fat do you need versus what I need? This has nothing to do with blood type, but it does have to do with your blood chemistry. And many of these things are being distorted, like cholesterol. Cholesterol is a great detoxifier. It's a wonderful defense against heart disease. And yet, if you watch the television ads, you'd think it was the other way around. And low cholesterol produces strokes and depression and a whole lot of things that you wouldn't want. We've just come out with a two-hour CD on cholesterol, the information, and it's just taken straight from the scientific literature, from science, from the Journal of Cardiology, the New England Journal of Medicine, British Journal of Medicine. All of these things clear back to where it started, which was in a Framingham study about 40 or 50 years ago. And he definitely says back there, do not lower the cholesterol on the elderly because it's going to lead to strokes and all these other problems. Now, elderly, by his definition, is, you ready for this?
Yes.
55. And elderly, according to the advertisements now, is closer to 35. Some of these studies are on old men who are 36 years old and up. So they're kind of distorting a whole lot of things there, which I resent because cholesterol is so important in recovery. The red cell membrane is 23% cholesterol. The bad cholesterol, it is used to manufacture hormones. And you certainly wouldn't want any hormones in your body, would you? You wouldn't want estrogen and testosterone and adrenaline and things like that. Well, of course you would. And those are made out of cholesterol. And the depression, this is directly related to the level of cholesterol. The lower the cholesterol, the greater the depression. And you may have heard the word Coors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the Coors Foundation put up some money to do blood tests on people where all we could do was take out amalgams and put in a composite, a plastic one that had been tested against the patient's blood to see that it was safe, because about 60% of the plastics are challenging to the immune system. And so we couldn't do anything in line of supplementation or nutrition or any of the things that I thought were controlling cholesterol. But we could do just what does mercury in itself do. And one of the biggest things, the biggest surprise to me in it, was the effect that the mercury fillings, silver mercury fillings, had on the cholesterol level. That your dentist controls your cholesterol level. And I'll bet your dentist doesn't know that.
And how does that happen?
Well, probably through liver function. The mercury, as it comes out of the filling, goes into the intestinal tract and is processed through the liver and through the kidney and messes up both of them. I mean, its first target is the brain, but after it gets washing around through the body, it has to be eliminated someplace. And liver and kidney are the ones who do it, and you know, it creates a firestorm as it goes through the liver or through the kidney. And when it goes through the kidney, through the liver, it messes with the body's ability to manufacture cholesterol. So the high cholesterols came down, the low cholesterols came up when we got the fillings out.
Hmm.
So
wow.
Dentistry, dental materials have such a wide, broad effect on many of the problems that people have. Migraine headaches are a big one with the mercury coming out of the silver fillings. And if you've ever had a migraine, you probably don't want another one. But if you go in and just yank them out and stick in one of the composites, one of the plastic fillings that has high aluminum content, you just think you had headaches before. They're going to get a lot worse.
So some of the plastic composite replacements are high in aluminum.
Yeah.
Now,
so it makes them last longer. Now, the patient may not last longer, but the filling does.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, I was looking here on your website, HugginsAppliedHealing.com, and there's a page mentioning other dental toxins that adversely affect the immune system or overall general health. And there's things about nickel and root canals and implants. I wanted to not only have you mention a little about that, but let our listeners know that if they wanted to call in, let me give you some phone numbers. The lines will be open for you. In the United States, toll-free 877-876-5227. Toll-free from Canada only, 888-815-9756. And people in other countries, 530-876-3222. And, of course, we're listening to the wonderful information of Dr. Hal Huggins, who for 38 years has been doing extensive research about health as it relates to mercury and amalgams and the effect of mercury and amalgams on different other health conditions. Dr. Huggins, we're just excited. Would you please give a few more comments, some of these things about nickel, root canals, implants, some of the different areas that are beyond the mercury and those problems?
Okay. Well, most of the crowns, you know, the cost of gold is going up, and I don't remember when it was, 20 years ago or so, the cost of gold went way up from $35 an ounce up to $600. Well, that made gold crowns go up. I used to do gold crowns for $55, and that was a few years ago. But now they're, you know, $1,000 or more for a gold crown. And so they went to nickel because, you know, if you take a nickel, the type we use in coins, how many crowns can you make out of one nickel? Yeah, quite a few. So, you know, the nickel crowns aren't real expensive. And the nickel is the most carcinogenic metal that is known, which means cancer-producing. So if you put nickel, take nickel and put porcelain on it, well, what's porcelain? It took me a long time. You wouldn't believe what I went through to find out the composition of porcelain. And as it turns out, bottom line is it's about 45% aluminum oxide. And the aluminum leaches out. But if you have a combination of, let's say a tooth is broken and it needs a root canal, you do a root canal, put a nickel crown with the porcelain fired on top of it. In women who are susceptible, you're going to end up with breast cancer on the same side that that crown is. And this I find quite irritating, that breast cancer is on the increase, yeah, directly proportional to the amount of nickel crowns, or they're called non-precious, because people might know that nickel was hazardous, so we'll call it non-precious. Hmm. But you put non-precious with a porcelain on it, it looks very, very nice. And, you know, the insurance is going to pay for your mastectomy, so it really doesn't matter that much, I guess.
Mm. Oh,
but, you
boy,
know,
there's some tongue-in-cheek humor.
Breast cancer, much of it does not have to happen. Now, how much of it is related to it, I don't know. But over the period of the last 20 years, don't believe we've seen one case of breast cancer that did not have a root canal tooth with a nickel crown and porcelain on it. So is that the direct cause? This is one of the things that we are studying at this time. And it looks like there just might be a positive, if you want to call it, a positive connection. There's
a strong correlation.
Yeah.
And this, you said you've studied for a number of years, looking at breast cancer people,
yeah.
And found that the can you remind me again how big a correlation there was between people with breast cancer and that they had a root canal or
yeah,
a crown?
Well, looking backwards, now there are people who have these crowns who don't have breast cancer. But if you look at a person who has breast cancer, the vast majority, and I'll have to say it's better than 95% because I can't remember one that I haven't seen this way, will have on the same side that the breast tumor, and I can tell you what the microscopic section is going to look like. Because when there is a nickel crown with porcelain on it, and the tooth has a root canal, we end up with the same microscopic evaluation every time. I mean, 100% is something to be worth looking into.
Yes. Huge.
But see, this is why the Dental Association lambasted me, because they don't want that information out. They're going to lose a whole lot of money and reputation and a lot of real important things.
Now, a dear friend had somehow, I don't know if it was related to amalgam, but just the power of dental things, had an abscess in one of his teeth. And I guess in the process of getting it handled, somehow it got into the brain, and he was literally hospitalized for 10 years before he died.
Yeah, and this is all in the scientific literature, that there's a nerve that comes into the tooth, and the bacteria Actinomyces is the one who's most famous for doing this. Is one of the bugs that's in an abscess tooth. It crawls down to the nerve and does something called retrograde axonal transport. Takes a bit to figure out what that means. Retrograde means backwards. So what it's doing, it is following backwards to the impulse, and the bacteria and the toxins are carried backwards from the mouth right up into the brain. And that's where you're... a lot of the brain problems can come from abscess teeth or from root canals.
Wow.
Because root canals are dead teeth, and there's a lot of bacteria. See, a root canal, a tooth is not connected directly to bone. There is a ligament that connects tooth to bone. And that's where the anaerobic bacteria, the dangerous ones, live. You know, the dentist says, well, I'm sterilizing the tooth. Well, he's sterilizing a column of air in the middle of the tooth, which has nothing to do with the periodontal ligament on the outside of the tooth. And every time you bite down, you squirt those deadly bacteria and their toxins into the bloodstream, and it can go anywhere.
And this is when a root canal has been performed?
Yeah, or an abscess tooth. A dead tooth, whether it's got a root canal in it or an abscess, really turns out to be about the same thing biologically.
Ah. So if someone has a dead tooth, then what do you recommend?
Well, you I'm kind of picky on this, because we have tested the body to see what happens. But when you remove a tooth, that is a very dangerous experience to the patient if you look at what's going on in the bloodstream. So what we do, we have some IV procedures we have going while we take the tooth out. And you take the tooth out and then take a low-speed burr, a dental burr, and remove the bone, the first millimeter of it, all the way around. That's like a 16th of an inch, because that's where most of the trashy type of bacteria are located. Now, some dentists are, well, many of them are afraid to touch bone with a burr. So they'll use a little spoon-like thing and scrape the inside, and that pushes the bacteria into the bloodstream immediately. These people usually get sick for 6 days, rarely five, rarely seven, but they feel like they have the flu for 6 days.
Mm.
But if you remove the bone properly, which is an extensive procedure, I mean, it takes all of 2 minutes, 3 minutes to do.
Wow, that easy.
Yep. If you take that bone out while the patient's being protected, and there are other protective things we do before and afterwards, and low back pain is one of the things that seems to come from root canals, and here again, where does that come from? But within 36 hours, usually the lower back pain is gone. If you take the tooth out properly, if you use a burr to remove the bone, you have to flush certain magical solutions in there. One of them is called sterile water.
Mm.
So, you know, these things are not that difficult to do if you do them. But it's like driving on the right side of the road or the left side of the road. It's not much harder to do one than the other. But depending on what country you're in, you can be a great hazard if you're on the wrong side.
Mm. Now, are there some other countries... I don't know if you've seen Michael Moore's movie Sicko. He's just talking about some of the American healthcare system.
No, I have not seen that.
Versus healthcare system in Canada, France, England, even Cuba. Anyway.
Yeah, what are we, 36th or 38th down the line as far as quality of healthcare?
Yeah.
We're number one as far as the expense is concerned. I know that.
Yeah, but more money is spent here than anywhere in the world on health, but yet it's not getting the job done. So,
Do you recommend seeing the movie?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I think he's done a real good job of putting some things out there in terms of what healthcare is like in some of these other countries, and helping to validate that that there is actually high quality healthcare available to people, Canada, England, France, other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's I think it just is a good wake up call. And he does a good job in his movies of putting together a lot of interesting things, so it's not just scare you, but it's entertaining as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because you've traveled quite a bit, are there other places where people are more conscious about what you're teaching? And
it is spreading worldwide. The Dental Association has an enormous amount of money to come in and squelch anything. The 60 Minutes program that's going to be showing tomorrow, they got it postponed 5 or 6 times, so it's 2 or 3 months down the line from where it was supposed to be shown. But where you've got a lot of money, you've got a lot of influence. And, you know, you take the license away from a few dentists for saying that, yeah, mercury's poisonous, and pretty soon everybody keeps their mouth shut. So there's a tremendous amount of resistance in any of the countries, and the Dental Association from the United States apparently has a controlling interest in most of the dental associations. So they really do a good job of squelching the information, keeping the public from finding out about it.
Huh. Wow. That's amazing. I guess we're just living in some pretty amazing times.
It's a matter of what's the most important thing in the world. Money.
Ah.
He who has the gold makes the rules. That's where the golden rule came from, so I understand.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it certainly appears that that seems to be the biggest controlling factor, is who's going to get hurt financially.
Now, I'm curious, you've made mention, because a number of people have had the amalgams taken out and replaced with composites.
Mm-hmm.
Once that is done, is there a way to test if that was a composite that was helpful for them?
Well, the thing to do is to test it beforehand, Ken. There's a blood test available where you test your serum beforehand, and I don't know, there are several thousand dental materials that are tested, and it comes out either highly reactive, moderately reactive, or least reactive. And so what you want to put in your mouth is what's least reactive, because you don't want to whittle on a tooth any more than you have to. And so if you test beforehand and find out what dental material is safe for you, then you don't have to worry afterwards. You've got a safe material. But the blood chemistry will certainly show it. The red blood cells and white blood cells do handstands and flips and all kinds of things if you put in the wrong or the right material. There are big changes that happen. The immune system is very sensitive to changes. And you put in the wrong material, the immune system is going to talk to you about it the next day. And the red and white cells are something called a CBC. It's a complete blood count. And it's not all that expensive, $15 to $25. And you get the results. You have to know how to interpret them. And just using the normal ranges does not do it. You have to know what we call the stability point. And that's where are these levels when everything is running well in a healthy person. Because most of your blood tests are based on what's called normal, and by definition, that's 95.56% of the population. Well, I'll give you a clue. 95.56% of the population is not in good health.
Unfortunately, in our country, that's...
And that's our standard. Because people go to the hospital, have a blood test, and You know, if they're brought in by an ambulance, chances are their blood's not real great shape. So
yeah.
It took a while to figure out where the stability points were. And we feel that this is a big contribution that we have made. Because if you have a new drug or if you have a new technique, run the blood test according to the stability points, and you find out whether you are improving the person or making them worse. It's very easy to see that.
Amazing. And you are training people in different parts of the country to do your work?
Well, we're trying to, but any time we get into an area, they're going to come in and raid the dental office and illegally take records, and there are all kinds of things they do to scare all the dentists in the community. So we do have probably 60 or 70 people around the United States, a few in England, some in Canada, who are trained to do this, but boy, they have to stay under the radar. Because the Dental Association is definitely opposed to doing anything that's going to give people better health. Now, we did just have a meeting. You know, FDA always refers to ADA, and they ask the American Dental Association, is mercury safe? And they say yes, and so FDA reports to Congress that mercury's safe. Well, and finally, there was enough activity about this that Congress appointed a special committee to evaluate the FDA's stand on what is their proof that it's safe. And I was one of the witnesses in that congressional hearing. And some of the people on the committee were teachers in dental school, so, of course, they have to vote in favor of mercury or they're going to lose their jobs. And still, by the time the presentations were over, the committee voted 13-7 that FDA was wrong, that mercury is not safe. Now, they haven't done a whole lot with that information, but that was pretty important. It's Washington, D.C., a congressional committee found that FDA was wrong and mercury's not safe.
Now, is there access to locating that in congressional records or
yes.
something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole thing. I don't know. It's maybe 300 pages. It was 3 days, 300 pages long. The people who are in my office Monday through Friday know where that information is.
But
it is on the FDA. The whole thing is there. And we have a copy of the whole audio and video presentation. In fact, I was just looking at part of it yesterday that the fellow who was head of children's dentistry said that he would consider it unethical to tell a patient that they could have a composite placed because it cost a few dollars more. So he insists that they place mercury fillings in children.
Mm.
I thought that was just absolutely something between sacrilegious and
so between
satanic.
Mercury and fillings and then...
This is the time they're growing and developing, and they don't need mercury being poured into their brain at that time. And to tell them it's unethical to place anything except mercury in their mouth is about as bad as a person can get.
Well, based on your research
The research, you just look at the scientific literature, and there are thousands of articles that tell you what mercury does. It's not just mine.
No. Well, I mean, you've been one of the strongest proponents of getting it out there all these years, Dr. Huggins, so that I appreciate very much.
Yeah, we do have over 200,000 data points in the chemistries to show what mercury does in the body. I don't think there's anybody else who's very competitive with that.
And do you make some of this information available to people if they want to talk to local representatives, congresspeople?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So they would go to drhuggins.com or call your office Monday through Friday during business hours?
If people in Congress want copies, I have a copy of my presentation with the slides and everything that I gave in Washington, D.C. I'd be happy to furnish it to them.
Mm-hmm. And people can also call your office 866-948-4638.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to give that information as it's about a minute away from wrapping up the program, and I feel like we could there's still a whole lot more to cover. I just want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule and congratulate you on the breakthroughs you're making with 60 Minutes in this country, Australia, and now New Zealand coming up, and an opportunity for people to turn to you, to get your book, to take advantage of this information as another important aspect for their health and well-being. Thank you, and God bless you, Dr. Huggins.
Well, thank you very much, Ken, for helping us generate awareness.
You're welcome. I'm just happy to do that. And to you and my beloved listeners, I just put forth a prayer and intention that your lives be blessed with great health, with wealth, with joy and prosperity, and that we have an opportunity to meet again next Saturday for more fun at Advanced Living. Until then, God bless you. Thank you, and goodbye for now. Let's go.